I'm going to start the meeting off. Representative Hawk is here. Nice and on time, unlike the rest of our committee. Except for a few loyal members. So, Representative Hawk, welcome. And when we get a quorum, we'll move your bill. And I understand it has to be referred to Representative Clark to me.
So, welcome to the committee, and why don't you just go ahead?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Just for a sec, Carol, are the Republicans boycotting my meeting for some reason? Go ahead. Caught in traffic.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Included with the members should be a handwritten amendment, and this is the best I can do, so I hope it's sufficient.
Why don't you give us a little... do you have anybody testify, by the way?
Mr. Chair, I do not have any individual testifying, but however, there is testimony that should be included in your handout.
There's a handout from a Ms. Gray?
Correct. And this is where the bill originated from, with her concern. When it comes to the teaching requirement for having a loan forgiveness if you teach any nursing classes. Generally what this bill does as amended, or as the proposed amendment, would be to clarify that you would be eligible for the loan forgiveness for if you teach a nursing class at least part-time. Part-time, though, was kind of, it wasn't a clear definition within the current statute, as many of our institutions use credit hours taught as a determination of if they're part-time or not. Also, there was some confusion, too, with what an academic year constituted, and with, you know, we don't oftentimes operate under a typical academic year anymore. We're trying to meet the needs of some of the students who need to go to class on a weekend, summer months, so on and so forth. So what I'm simply trying to propose is that if an individual teaches at least 12 credit hours or 720 hours within 1 year, they would be eligible for the loan forgiveness.
I'm trying to follow this with the deletions and the original additions. Are you requiring them, is this kind of a lower amount of hours than currently, or higher, or the same?
Mr. Chair, it's the intention to have it the same. As it's written now, is that they have to teach at least 20 hours per term, which is part-time. A typical teacher with full-time teaching would be teaching 24 credits per year. So we're saying 12 credits would be considered part-time, and also acknowledging that the typical term doesn't really take into account the demands within the education system now, which includes summer months and weekends. So we're just trying to clarify it with 720 hours per year or 12 credit hours.
Okay. We don't have a quorum yet. Do we have a quorum? Oh, we have a quorum. So Representative Slocum then moves the handwritten amendment, which we all have. I suppose that Representative Fogney should move the bill. I plan to move the bill first. House File 3014 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Health and Housing Finance. And then we have the handwritten amendment. Are there any questions on the amendment? Anyone want to, from the audience, want to talk for or against the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. And then we have the bill in front of us as amended. Any other questions, comments from the audience on that? Mr. Nelson, do you want to comment on anything? Oh, okay. All those in favor, then, the House File 3014 be recommended to pass and we refer to Health and Housing Finance. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Hodge. Representative Mahoney, do you want to just jump right in here then?
I can get him. Which
Representative? Well, yeah, Representative Bly, we'll take you. Excuse me.
I'm willing to pull Representative Bly. I don't have a lot of it
moves
here.
That, oh, I see you had some witnesses. Representative Bly moves that House File 2647 be recommended to pass and probably be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
This is a bill, Chairman, that is necessary to do some repair on a bill that was passed last time and was funded, and we're very much appreciative of that. And I have Ann McCulley of Child Care Resource and Referral Network to speak to the bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. What this bill would do is correct an oversight, I would say, that we made last year, and that the language that passed did not allow for any dollars for the administration of the scholarship program. And so this would be asking for a 5% of the amount that comes to the program could be allowed to be used for administration. The Teach Scholarship Program, I'll just give you the briefest of overview to refresh your memory, stands for Teacher Education and Compensation Helps. And it helps early childhood providers go back and receive a degree, a higher ed degree, to help increase their quality and to reduce turnover in the field of child care, which is actually a huge problem for us. Since its inception in 2002, we've provided over $1.2 million in scholarships. And last year alone, 177 scholarships were awarded for a total of $441,000. 2,214 college credits were purchased by the program on behalf of recipients at 31 colleges and universities. 13 recipients earned an AA degree, 3 recipients earned a BA degree, and 11 recipients earned the National Child Development Associate credential. This is just last year. So far this year, we have awarded 53 scholarships with the new higher education funds for a total of $167,000. So this is just a request, as I mentioned, to allow us to take some of those dollars to help make sure those scholarships go out the door, students are supported, and we can do the kind of outreach we need to do. Thank you.
I refresh my memory. What was the dollar amount in the bill last year for the, remember?
I think it was $250,000 each year.
Okay. And then is it matched by private contributions?
Mr. Chair, we receive the preponderance of the money for the program comes from the Department of Human Services, and that's through the quality dollars. The child care development block grant allows certain dollars to be spent on quality improvements in child care, so another $250,000 approximately comes from the Department of Human Services.
And there is an administrative fee allowed in that?
Mr. Chair, correct. That is actually how we pay for most of the administration right now.
Okay. Any questions on the bill then? If not, then Representative Bly renews his motion. House Bill 2647 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Any other questions, comments from the audience? Not all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye opposed. Motion prevails. Great
Thank
job.
Thank you, Chair.
It's quick. Representative Mason is not here, so I
Mahoney,
think
Mahoney, Mahoney.
I will take Mahoney, Mahoney, Mahoney in that order. We may interrupt you, Representative Mahoney. So why don't you start with 3304?
Mahoney, baloney, Mahoney.
Or do you have witnesses that you want to take one of the other bills first?
Mr. Chair, none of these bills will take altogether that long, so any witness can wait that long.
Okay, well then, Representative Mahoney moves that House File 3304 be recommended to pass. If you want this bill, I see you probably want this bill to stay where it's at, and recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
Correct, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, this is a bill that the Innovative Technology and Economic Development Research Grant Program at the University of Minnesota. And it is not on the university's priority list. They are having discussions about it. Minnesota's economy was built on our state's past investment in research and development. We started companies such as Medtronic or 3M or IBM or Control Data. However, we've seen a decline in some of these larger companies and these startup companies that have turned into mega companies. This particular bill funds the university to kind of do a program that they do over at the University of Wisconsin. This would provide funding for the university-based research projects that have been identified as commercialization potential. I had to write that down. Yeah. The researchers would begin the process of finalizing the research and spinning it out of the university and creating a company in the state of Minnesota. They have a volunteer board that would review the viability of the science and the marketability of these ideas. My committee, the Bioscience and Innovative Technologies, had spent the last 2 weeks looking at venture capital and the valley of death for venture capital is taking the idea and getting it ready to sell. Getting it ready to take it to these venture capitalists and get that $5 million investment to take it to its fullest potential. I have with me today Dr. Tim Mulcahy from the University of Minnesota. He's the Vice President for Research. And he also ran a program very much like this. And again, he is testifying at the request of the chair of the Bioscience Committee, not at the request of the University of Minnesota or the region. So he can tell you a little bit more about the project in the University of Wisconsin and how he could replicate it here.
Dr. Mulcahy, welcome.
Chair Rubina, committee members, thank you very much. Representative Mahoney, thank you. I had the opportunity as the Associate Vice Chancellor for Research Policy at the University of Wisconsin 3 years ago to basically oversee a program similar to this in Wisconsin. The funding was comparable in dollar amounts. It was provided by the state. And the intent, as Representative Mahoney has indicated, was to provide support for critical ideas that are approaching the commercialization point, particularly of relevance to either Minnesota's economic development directly or for a business or industry sector in the state. For example, many times we had suggestions from the ag community that some additional funding in a research area that we couldn't find funding from other sources would be valuable to convert an important crop product in the state to either better yield or better productivity. These would be great opportunities to provide funding in small dollar amounts in absolute critical areas that have a potential for profound impact to the state. So I think this is a very important tool in the toolbox for Minnesota's economic development, and I think Representative Mahoney has identified a great opportunity in this bill.
Questions of Dr. Mulcahy? Okay, then. Other representatives?
Thank you. Dr. Mulcahy, can you give an example of, you were talking about some agricultural products, can you give an example of what, either in that area or others, you might be thinking of?
Representative Clark, Chair Rukavina, and members. The one that comes to mind immediately is cranberries. We're a very major crop in the state of Wisconsin, and there were particular diseases that were reducing the yield and were actually costing the industry significantly. The opportunity to find funding through traditional federal sources to do research on that narrowly focused area were not available, but through this program we were able to use the funding provided by the state, going through this peer review process to ensure scientific validity but also commercial impact, to provide funding to investigators that in fact did result in improvements in ways of managing the cranberry crop and such that we did in fact see an improvement in yield. But that would be an example.
Are you talking about like a pesticide or something like that?
No, in this particular case it wasn't a pesticide. It had to do with harvesting techniques and things like that. But I would assume in certain circumstances a pesticide or a new approach to rid the crop from a particular pest might be another eligible type of activity.
Okay, other questions? If not, then Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House 3304 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion and maybe a bill that we're going to have.
I have all the confidence in the world in you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions, comments from the audience? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Nathan is here, I see. So we will jump back, Representative Mahoney, to Representative Mason's bill, which was passed, members, in our omnibus bill last year, but was it vetoed by... Are you going to try to override this one? Since we're on a...
My understanding is it came out of the
Yeah, actually, Representative Mason, this was in the first bill that got vetoed, and I think was one of the things that was cited by the governor. Welcome to the committee. Representative Reinert moves that House File 1256 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus Bill, go ahead.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this was a bill that was heard last year, and just to give you a little oversight, we'll try to keep this quick. Minnesota's economy was built on the state's past investments in research and development, which resulted in companies like Medtronic, 3M, IBM. But that we've seen an overall decline in public and private investment in R&D since 1990. And according to our state economists, this decline in R&D will likely result in future for slower future economic growth. I do have Dale Orland from Bioscience Alliance to talk if you would like further information on this. Again, I know it's been a long time since you've been with me discussing it, but basically it's to set up a fund that will be giving money to venture capital, and it's a one-time only investment.
Welcome to the committee again, Mr. Warren. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. I'm glad to be here. My name is Dale Wallstrom. I'm the CEO of the BioBusiness Alliance. We also have Mark Ungs behind us, who will also be prepared to testify. What's being handed out to right now is a piece of paper, and I'll be referring to that piece of paper. It has a graph on it, which you've seen before. Just a couple of very quick comments. This, what we're intending to do with this, as we look at opportunities to try to create jobs in a quicker manner, one of the opportunities that we realize has potential is that when you look at research, as Representative Mason talked about, there are actually two sources, fundamentally two sources that research comes from. One is the academic sector, which you just heard from with Representative Mahoney and Tim Mulcahy from the university. The other is from the private sector. And there's a lot of research that happens with the private sector. It's usually a little bit further downstream than what you find in the research at the university level. And if you look at this diagram that's in front of you, it's just trying to demonstrate the number of ideas, the size of the tube, so to speak, on the left-hand side as we go from basic research on through to the review process. But what happens inside of a company, and because we're here to talk about the private sector piece, what happens inside of a company is as ideas move through research, there are many ideas that are funded. Every year, there's a review process that takes place where companies look at their ideas that are good ideas, and what they find is that some ideas are not, and but many are. But unfortunately, because of the size of the investment that's necessary to take it from the point of proving market potential to the point of market release, many, if not most, ideas are put on the shelf with good intentions of trying to take them off again next year. What happens in reality is many of them ultimately die. They sit on the shelf and die. So what we're trying to do here with this bill is to provide some small incentive to private sector companies to take those good ideas that have had a significant, if not most, of the risk removed and take them out and put them into a startup mode for a company to become formed. The reason that this is of interest or of value to us is that the more risk that's been removed, the greater the probability of attracting private sector investment. So with that in mind, when these ideas reach this point of market potential, a lot of risk has gone and the probability of achieving venture capital funding or some other form of private sector funding is greatly enhanced. So our goal with this is simply provide a small amount of incentive to help companies move ideas into somebody else's hands, such as Mark Ong's behind me, to take to the market. And that's it.
Any questions? Mr. Wallstrom, are you the would you be a BioBusiness Alliance that qualifies as a 501c3 to sit on the board?
Yes.
Would there be any others?
501c3, if you can, we would have to work with the Commission of Deed to define who that should be, but certainly it would be, we would expect to see venture capitalists, we would expect to see possibly organizations like AURI who are, you know, non-profit as well. But we try to select the membership that would reflect the possible opportunities that could come out of the various private sector enterprises.
Okay. Have you thought about the possibility of the state getting a little, and when they give these grants, getting a little piece of the pie if something becomes successful? Or is that too capitalistic for this committee? Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, after we haven't progressed that far down the road, we thought we should have the board formed first and start looking at that. But obviously, if there's a way to, beyond tax, you know, receiving a tax in the form of salaries or corporate tax, if there's a way to do that, that'd be a good thing. Especially if we could use it to refund more of the same.
I was trying to be, I think Representative Eastman was quite proud of me, I think, when I thought I was turning into a capitalist over there. Representative Mahoney.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I myself was just going to suggest that it might be used at our to help fund colleges and expansion of colleges or new campuses to expand the horizon of job creation in the state of Minnesota, maybe even farther north.
Yes.
You know, but Mr. Chair, I have this is a bill that I had some fingers in and have talked to some of the corporate players in the state of Minnesota, and it's amazing how many great ideas they have sitting on the shelf that they do not want to bring forth because of, you know, it's not only government that has budget shortfalls, but sometimes businesses have budget shortfalls and they don't want to bring these things forward. They want to take their one or two that they think can complement some of their other products, or they've got them sitting on the shelf that are revolutionary products that they don't want to have to retool their whole line and invest all that money. So they're sitting there. This has some potential if we can pry some of them loose from larger corporations, and I don't really want to speak to which corporation it is because they'll probably yell at me. But I know this has been tried in the past, particularly with 3M. And there was some success with it approximately 25 years ago. So.
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
If time permits, having Mr. Ongs come up and tell his story briefly might add a lot of clarity to, I think, what Representative Mahoney is talking about.
Welcome to the committee. Come on up and identify yourself for the tape and say a few words.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Ungs. I'm the CEO of a startup called AC Therapeutics. Until recently, I worked for Boston Scientific based in Maple Grove, Minnesota. I was there for 12 years. My job was identifying and investing in new technologies to expand the technology or business base of the company. And in that effort, actually hatched an effort in cell therapy, cell-based therapy. The work was done down in Atlanta, Georgia. And it was going very well until the company decided to acquire Guidant for $27 billion, and they took on $9 billion in debt. So things, projects like this that were outside of the core businesses became a casualty of that strategic move. And so I left the company in November and got permission to pick up the project and to continue to pursue it. And that's how I met Dale. It is a biotechnology-oriented investment. And it has many of the same challenges of any startup, looking for funds, looking for people. So I do want to touch on one point, and that is what can the role of the state play? Because the private sector is actually quite efficient. I mean, there's billions of dollars out there in venture capital. And so, you know, what business would the state, or what contribution can the state? So I think it's in Dale's vision that one of the obstacles of a startup is finding a talent pool. And it can actually influence where you end up putting the company. If you can't draw, you know, the workers and the knowledge from the surrounding area, you have to go somewhere else. And in the area of biotechnology, the Twin Cities is on the weak side. I mean, if my idea was a new stent, a new balloon, a new pulse generator, no problem. Tremendous talent here, but on the biotech side, not much. And so some well-placed investments to stimulate folks like myself, because I really don't want to move down to Atlanta, I like it here, could encourage to create that critical mass of talent pool. Any questions?
Any questions for the witness? Representative Gunther.
How many employees do you
have? Hi, you're looking at them right now. So I'm in a very early stage.
Are you finding capital difficult in Minnesota?
Yes, but the capital is pretty fluid, meaning there is an advantage. Most venture capitalists like to invest in their backyard because they're familiar. They don't want to travel if they don't have to. They know the local resources they can grab onto. It is on the minor side. I mean, it's nothing compared to the Bay Area, but that really isn't the issue. It's more, again, the talent pool that can be an obstacle for what I'm doing.
Is it Mr. Owen?
Ungs is the way you pronounce it.
How do you?
Ungs.
Okay. You said you were working for Boston Scientific, so do they let you take this idea of yours that I assume was yours and run with it, or is there any proprietary like information they have or technology that you, how were you able to take your idea from Boston Scientific when you...
Well, I asked for permission because I had a non-compete, and so I was bound not to pursue projects according to my non-compete contract with Boston, which is a standard format. I was bound not to pursue projects that had been developed within the company. So what I do is you ask permission, and they granted that to me because it was outside of their core business. So the spinoffs, by definition, are things that are not directly related to their core business, and they're comfortable letting them shed. And Boston does retain equity ownership, so they do have an incentive to make, you know, that I'm successful in this.
Okay. Any other questions? If not, then Representative Breinert renews her motion that House Bill 1256 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Any other questions, comments from the audience? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney, and members, you know, I think the governor's got to come out with his supplemental budget proposal on probably the first or towards the end of the first week in March. I don't know where he's going to get money for supplemental budget proposals, but we'll see what he proposes and if there's any money that this committee has to work with. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Mahoney moves that House Bill 2972 be recommended to pass and held over for possible inclusion in our omnibus. Representative Mahoney, before you start, though, can I move these minutes? Let's see, Representative Hartman, move these minutes from the February 20th meeting. Are there any additions or corrections to it? If not, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And then, Representative Hartman, you're on a run, so you might as well move the February 21st minutes also. Additions or corrections to that? Representative
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I wasn't at the February 21st meeting.
Maybe you shouldn't then. Representative Slocum moves then. Representative Bettman.
Yeah, I was pretty sure I was here that evening.
That would have been the Thursday.
Thursday, correct.
Okay, we will correct. Representative Detmer moves to correct the minutes then, and he was here. Yes. Okay. And Representative Slocum then moves the minutes as corrected. Any other corrections? All those in favor? It was Representative Detmer, we apologize. It was a pretty hectic meeting that night, if you recall correctly. So we did a lot of things that I didn't even realize that
while you were here.
Okay, all those in favor of the minutes for the February 21st meeting as corrected, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Representative Mahoney, then, back to House File 2972.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, if I could correct you and move this to the House floor, this doesn't have to go to any other committees that I know of. I've spoken with the chair of the Ag Committee, and if I put the amendment, that should be in your packet on there. Unless you want to carry it over into an omnibus bill.
We can still move
I'm
it
fine with either one.
The amendment A1?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Representative Mahoney moves House Bill 2972 be recommended to pass and placed on the general registry, I guess. And then you move the A1 amendment?
A1 amendment, and when we've got that on, I'm going to put a small oral amendment onto it also.
Go ahead. Why don't you tell us before you do that what the amendment does then?
This amendment, the way the bill is written, we eliminate the AURI, which I could feel the shaking down from the office below me in Representative Gunkey's office. So we went and talked, and this amendment separates the MPI and the AURI and puts it into a different place in statute so that it really does, this bill will do absolutely nothing to the AURI and allows the MPI to better reflect what it does and I'll just read it here.
Perfectly clear.
The MPI and the AURI will no longer be connected as they have both become nonprofits. This amendment severs the statutory relationship between the two and removes references to them in the statute. Now, this particular, and Representative Gunkey, after looking at the amendment, was very comfortable with what we were doing, and just allows AURI to continue on as it was going and MPI to go off in its own direction and get a different name.
All right, and then your oral?
The oral amendment on page 1, line 12, after the word shall, insert conduct outside and applied research.
On site.
No, conduct outside and applied research.
I think it's supposed to be on-site.
On-site?
Yeah.
I just wrote it down wrong. Yes, Chair.
Conduct on-site and applied research, and that's been approved by my good friend, Representative Gunkey, then?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
And he and the Farm Bureau and the Farmers Union and anybody else in the agricultural community is comfortable with what you're doing?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. At least there has been contact made, and no one has, to my knowledge, made any comments on it.
Okay, questions? If not, then Representative Mahoney moves House File 2972 be recommended. Oh, did we vote? We didn't vote on the amendment? Oh, excuse me. Okay. Representative Mahoney, motion to move the A1 amendment as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. And now then, move the Representative Mahoney moves that House File 2972 be recommended, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the House floor. Questions on the bill? Would your witness like to testify or comment?
My witness is here to testify.
Welcome to the committee. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I think, as many of you know, Minnesota Technology is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we work with Minnesota manufacturers through our staff to help them compete and grow and add jobs. And the name Minnesota Technology has been sometimes and often confused with Minnesota High Tech Association. So we're asking that we have permission to change the name to Enterprise Minnesota, along with clean up some of the statutes, AURI being the best example. And lastly, in order to attract the kind of people that we need to attract to continue to work with these manufacturers, we're asking that the salary cap of 95% of the governors be removed.
Okay. I remember when Representative Clark, and you probably do, when this was the Greater Minnesota Corporation, got its funding from the lottery and was going to help economic development in rural Minnesota, and now we've come full circle and you split off the AURI, and now you're coveting our economic development for the Twin Cities. You know, that's great. That's great. Well, okay. But I know you help everybody around the state, and I said
I was just going to jump in here. I've seen the map of where the where this particular group helps, and I would like to get as much help in the metro area as you guys get in the rural area if you need folks.
It's fun out there in rural Minnesota, isn't it, Sam? Representative Clark.
Well, I always wonder when people want to make more than the governor, how high do you want to go?
You know, if I could, being the president of the organization and potentially affected, I would ask that our former board chairman and a longtime member of our board speak to that, Jim Roden.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Representative.
And identify yourself for
the committee. My name is Kim Roden. I'm the former chair of the board of Minnesota Technology, Inc., and currently serve on the board, however. I've led two search committees for replacing our president. And I don't know that I can address Representative Clark's question with a number, but what I can tell you, Representative Clark, is that when we did our most recent search for a new president, which resulted in us hiring Bob Till, we went out to the marketplace to get feedback about what a president with the kind of capabilities that we want for the organization, what their salary level in the market would command. And the salary level that we got back was between $140,000 and $170,000. Now, I can assure you that Mr. Till is not making that, but as we have moved from being essentially an appropriations-based agency, much like perhaps a state agency might be, we are no longer a quasi-state agency. We're kind of off on our own. We are successful only based on the amount of sales and revenue that we generate. We aren't tied to the state any longer like a quasi-state agency. So from my perspective as a board member and from trying to attract the kind of talent that we want to attract, not just for the president but for the rest of the organization, we want to be able to go out into the market and get the best possible people who are going to be able to sell our services and generate the kind of jobs and economic development that we think is worthy of an organization like ours, based on the market, not based on what used to be our former status, which was in essence a unit of government. So, you know, to get back to the original purpose of this bill, the original purpose of this bill is to bring us up to date and really take bring us to where we are today, which is no longer in essence a quasi-state agency. The state a few years back cut our funding. I think some of you who were in elective office are aware of when that happened. So we no longer get appropriations from the state of Minnesota. So that, along with several other provisions of the original statute, we would like to update. There has not been a major revision to our statute since 1991. The only other revision to our statute occurred about 4 years ago when we lost our state funding, and we changed the way in which we recruit our board members. So what I'm trying to do is look forward, like a good board member would, and make certain that as we replace staff and as we go out to hire staff, we can hire the best that are out there that can generate the kind of revenue and job activity and economic development that we think is worthy of an organization like ours. We obviously continue our relationship with the state through the gap funding, but we are no longer, in essence, a quasi-state agency. So that's the reason. It's a long answer, but happens to be the best one I can come up with.
Well, it was fairly good. Representative Clark.
So you do get state funding? We get a project funding through the GAP. It's the Growth Acceleration Program. It was a two-year grant we got last year. It has a beginning and an ending. You know, so it's a project type of funding. It is not an appropriation whereby the state just says, here's your money, go forth and spend it. And in fact, the money really, the majority of the money does not go to MPI. It goes to the business to help address the cost of those services. So MPI isn't really getting state money per se. MPI got a grant from the state of Minnesota to help businesses who would like to buy services be able to buy down the rate. So that's not a general appropriation like here's $100,000 to, as an example, hire staff and so forth to do things. So it's very different than the kind of funding that MPI got in its initial stages.
Mm-hmm. But you still do want state subsidy.
It's not a state subsidy, Representative Clark. Just to be clear,
I want to, could I maybe
go ahead?
Insert myself. The funding, the Growth Acceleration Program, was a grant to Deed, of which we get no operating funds from.
I get very uncomfortable with anybody kneels in front of me. So. I like looking up at people. It's,
the grant can pay for up to 50% of the services that we provide to a small manufacturer. And so we get no funding from the state whatsoever for operations of the business. Our business is based on fees.
Somebody's cell phone is causing us problems here. I know it's mine, not mine. So. Okay, members, if you can, I think it has a really bad effect in this room when we leave them on. So, excuse me. Go ahead.
So the Growth Acceleration Program, of which Representative Mahoney sponsored last year, is a grant that went to DEED, of which we are the administrators, and it can pay for up to 50% of the cost of our services to help small, less than 100 employee manufacturers to grow their business. And we believe that's a great use of results-based funding, but it's a grant. We get no funding at all for operations from the state of Minnesota.
Oh,
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
Maybe a good program, but you do indirectly then, I guess. I mean, this money can only go to you, right? It doesn't, when we make the appropriation for the GAP program, it doesn't, can't go to anybody else other than this organization, is that right?
We're the only qualified organization in the state that can work with these manufacturers to help them grow, so therefore the grant was designed. And I give an example of an organization west of Minneapolis that probably wouldn't be existing today, that we were able to help streamline their manufacturing operation. They employ 65 employees and are back on track of being a phenomenal supplier to FedEx that was really struggling. And they couldn't afford our services if this grant hadn't helped pay 50% of already reduced rates.
Further questions? Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Mahoney, I was in this committee when we had cut the funding to MTI. And actually talked to a gentleman from MTI the other night at Norwegian. They're reducing the Norway consulate in Minneapolis, sent it over to Chicago, and he actually has part-time work with you. I was just kind of curious on this reducing the governor's salary on here, because I had understood that we're changing the name on here. We're basically pushing him out, saying you're on your own, and then restricting him with a 95% salary. I guess I'm wondering why we even have them as a part in statute now that would regulate, and that they would have any conformity to the state statute, since they are their own entity. Perhaps the author could explain that to me.
Mr. Chair and Representative
Mahoney.
What this bill does is take away that 95% limitation on their on the salary of their employees. Frankly, I've been an advocate of taking that away from statewide. I don't see the point to it. If you're looking for good talent, you should be able to hire good talent, and the marketplace will kind of lay that one out. But this bill, if this bill passes, will not have this. Minnesota Technologies, Inc. will not have that 95% cap. They will be able to pay 100% of the governor's salary, or 110%, or whatever.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I guess to that point, we're changing the name from Minnesota Technology, Inc. to Enterprise Minnesota, Inc. And is that to create guidelines for the services that Enterprise Minnesota Inc. is fulfilling, so that other entities in the state may want to step up to the plate and be competitive against this organization? I guess I'm wondering why we, if we're doing away with the organization as a state-sponsored organization, why we even put them in statute?
Answer that one. One of the concerns, there's another organization called Minnesota High Technology Association, and they get confused with the clients get confused with which one is which. This is a name change to clarify. Minnesota High Technology Association has a lot of meetings, around the state, primarily focused out of the University of Minnesota, deals with 20-somethings and young 30s that are in the technology business. This particular business goes out to manufacturing plants
St. Cloud being a great example. I know there's a good number of them that they've worked with up in that area to streamline their manufacturing process, to show them how they can find a better way to use their computer power. Most all computers are more powerful than we ever used them for. Some of this, that's what they do. They don't get together and help up-and-coming youngsters network, which is what Minnesota High Technology does. It's one of the things. Better be careful how I phrase that. So that's why we do the name change, just so that we don't have any confusion between people out there and companies.
Well, but I can understand, Representative, and what you're really asking is, why do you even want to be in statute anymore,
right,
when you're not even a quasi-state agency anymore? Why do we have to change the name at all? Just let you go out on your own and do your thing, and then you don't, you know, need any special legislation for your salary or anything else. So I guess this is kind of a legitimate question. Mr. Kill, you're probably the one to answer.
It's a good question, Mr. Chair. Minnesota Technology is one of 59 affiliates of a federal program called NIST-MEP. This is within the Department of Commerce. NIST stands for National Institute of Standards and Technology. MEP is the Manufacturing Extension Partnership. And all these affiliates are focused on helping small, medium-sized manufacturing organizations to grow and thrive and compete on a worldwide marketplace. We would be the only organization that did not have a public mission, and we believe existing within statute, though defined somewhat as a hybrid, is an important to keep that tie, and also to satisfy our federal partner. And that would be one of the reasons. Number two, as a quasi-public organization, we do offer reduced rates to organizations that are under 100 employees, and that better allows us to serve, especially companies in greater Minnesota, which cannot afford to pay, may have, pardon me for saying, metro rates if they're located in Grand Rapids or Stevens, Minnesota, or along the border in Frost, Minnesota, where we've got clients. So it's important to keep the tie to the state to still satisfy our relationship with the federal program.
Okay, there's a lot of questions there. There you go. Okay, Representative Moe.
That was my question, too.
Okay. Any other questions, comments from the audience? If not, then Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House File 2972, as amended, be recommended to pass, and this one, too, re-referred to.
Mr. Chair, if you want to keep it in your omnibus bill, I'm comfortable with that. I'm very comfortable either way.
If you want it to go on its own, we can do both.
We could do both?
There's no fiscal note on this at all, is there? Okay. Well, we'll renew your motion that it be recommended to pass as amended, and refer to the House floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And finally, Representative Mahoney, 3205. Representative Mahoney moves that House File 3205 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the bonding finance.
Correct.
This is the one where you intended to have a...
Mr. Chair, this bill was intended to be... It's a drafting error. It is drafted as an appropriation, and it really needs to be a bonding request. And what this amendment, the A1 amendment, would be a delete... it's not a delete all amendment, but it moves the language from an appropriation to a bonding. And I have... pretty simple, and I'll get it over to finance, and I have all sorts of people here who are so excited that they'd love to testify about it, but don't really see any point on just getting it over to finance.
No, they can testify in the bonding committee. We moved every other bill out of here, so we'll move this one. Representative Mahoney moves the 3205 A1 amendment. And any questions on the amendment? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, if I could just say that I have...
Do you want to have some testifiers?
No, I just like to, unless there's questions,
I'd just like to thank the people from Tower Investment in Pine Island and the people that have been working with them. They drove up here today in case there was a question.
This is the this was Representative Twiggum's
yes,
question last year that I think, didn't we give a little bit of money, 20 pounds, and keep it alive? So.
Yes, it did survive in that particular place. We moved some money out of the bioscience development funds last year, and not quite enough to finish this particular project off, so they're back to try and finish it off.
Representative Clark.
Tell a little bit about this proposal, the Falls Healthy Living by Nature. Could you tell me again what that actually does?
No, I can't. I can't tell you what that does. I know it is a it's a medical facility that tries to do holistic healing and in conjunction with. Boy, I'm not going to be able to give you a better answer than that.
Do you want your testifier to come?
Yeah, this is somebody here.
Bring down Mr. Griffin from Tower Investments.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Just identify yourself for the tape.
I'm Jeff Griffin with Tower Investments. I'm the project manager of the Health Run project. To answer your question, the Pulse Healthy Living Center, that's part of a wellness community that we're doing right adjacent to the Bioscience Tech Park, and it's in combination. We're really trying to promote our Bioscience Tech Park and fill a gap in Minnesota. And to get companies to move to Minnesota, one of the things we want to do to promote it is to have this wellness community right next door, so we have a complete package to entice these firms to come to Minnesota. And so it's more to augment and supplement the Bioscience Tech Park.
So the people who work at the Bioscience Research Park utilize this facility, or they?
That's correct. That's correct.
They live there.
Hopefully they live there too. It's sure an option. That would be our preference, but the facility will be open to employees also, with walkability back and forth from the tech park to the healthy living community.
So it's housing and...
It's housing, it's fitness center, it's a whole environment to promote wellness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Maybe I could give you some information afterwards. I remember looking at it and wondering a little bit what the underlying... philosophy was of it, and I couldn't quite get it from the materials maybe.
Yes, and it's mostly to supplement and augment our Bioscience Tech Park.
I recall there was a lot of infrastructure to the state.
Yeah.
And Representative Twiggum was asking for it to hook up to the city's sewer and water, which was quite a ways away, if I recall correctly.
That's exactly correct, Chair.
If I'm not mistaken, the infrastructure is in the governor's bill this year, is it not? Some of it?
Representative Mahoney, no?
Not to my knowledge.
I thought there was a part. Okay.
Okay. Any further questions? If not, then Representative Mahoney renews his motion that House Bill 3205 be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to the Bonnie Finance Committee. No further questions. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Members, tomorrow Representative Norton has a couple of bills up, but we also have the deed folks here for the governor's deed proposal, so I would suggest that, my friends from the Republican side of the aisle come, because, I don't know, I might be crabby tomorrow. So, you don't want me to pick on Mr. McElroy.
Is this a cichlid thing?
Yeah. wait a second. Oh, Representative Beavers, you looked a little crabby yesterday, so I'm entitled to, Okay. No. Oh, members, there's a report from that was required in statute from the Office of Higher Education on our grant program. There's folders over there for you, any of you that want to grab the report. So with that, members, I see I have an important constituent here from down in Buell, Evelyn. Meeting adjourned.